News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just a few minutes here because I ran a little bit long with John Sutherland. But so I got to tell you, I had an interesting conversation. I'm still in number one of the Triple Dipper, by the way. Tomorrow is one of the most momentous days, politically speaking, that we've had in Alabama for a while. So I'm going to hang on this one until I'm done. But number one is the poll position. Talking about the polls, talking about the races, talking about the things that are happening in tomorrow's primary. Right now, we're making national news, just so you know. New York Times writing stories about the fact that Mo Brooks is resurging in the polls. Balanchine Report has a story right now saying that Trump-backed candidates are 81-3 in primaries ahead of the races in Alabama, Arkansas, and Georgia. And just it's interesting to me to see Alabama's polls making national news. We're a red state. I mean, people don't tend to really stop and think about things that you're not in a swing state for, or you're not one of the heavy electoral states for. But they're watching now because we have one of the best election cycles of anybody. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out tomorrow. I got to tell you, too, I had an interesting conversation with a Washington Post reporter on Saturday. So the Washington Post, not known for being a bastion of conservative news, if you know what I mean, but the Washington Post, they asked for an opportunity to get my feedback on what's happening with the races, but they specifically wanted to know about Mo Brooks. The question was, I think the way he worded it was, how did Mo Brooks come back to life? Okay. It wanted to know things like, what did you see with regards to, you know, the Trump unendorsement, and has that is something happened that has changed the dynamic? Because if you're watching the polls like we do on this show, you know that when Trump first unendorsed, that it had the effect of having a massive hit, and it seemed like he dropped in half almost. Durant and Britt surged to the lead. Brooks was suddenly going from 30-something to 16, I think it was, at one point. And he is now, right now, in a statistical dead heat for first place. And it's neck and neck. And today, Ted Cruz was in Alabama, up in the Huntsville area here, just stumping for Mo Brooks. And so the Washington Post wants to know, what happened? And I said, well, first of all, I said, I think that the Trump unendorsement has begun to wane. I think people are looking around. They're looking to see what's what, and they recognize that if you want somebody with a voting record, the only one in that race who has a voting record is Mo Brooks. I mean, Durant's got his candidacy, which is strong in its own right. Katie Britt has got her resume of having worked for Shelby in D.C., but the only one who has a voting record in D.C. that people can measure up to or measure is Mo Brooks, and I think that plays in. The guy then had the audacity to ask me, this is Washington Post, so take it with a grain of salt. He says, are you feeling any deja vu since the 2017 election when, you know, because he knows that McConnell is not on friendly terms with Mo Brooks, and which I think plays well for Brooks in Alabama. And he says, are you feeling any deja vu, like from the 2017 election with McConnell being involved in the primary then? And I said, the only deja vu I've got is that the Washington Post called me then, too, and I almost didn't take your call because of that. All he could do was go, oh, yeah, okay. But anyway, we went on and talked, and we'll see how that article comes out. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, and it has gotten the attention of the political world. Alabama, always red, and yet what kind of red? So that's the thing. He also asked, what are the candidates like? And I said, we have, in the Senate race, the three top candidates are all distinctly different. Each one claims the mantle of conservatism, but their backgrounds are distinctly different. And that's been bringing an interesting dynamic to it. Yeah. All right. Washington Post. Wow. I almost didn't take that interview for real. But I did. I just didn't let him bait me down any trails I didn't want to be in. So we'll see how it comes out. That doesn't always matter with them. All right. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We're going to keep this going. Poll position. The polls open tomorrow. We'll keep talking. Y'all stay tuned. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. All right, listen, top of the hour, you're going to want to stay tuned. Another candidate who you've heard from here on the show before, he sat in the studio with me a couple of weeks ago, Tim James, in his final push for governor, is going to be on with us at 4 o'clock. Listen, a couple other things that are happening, though. I want to tell you about some new developments that are going on within certain races. So a minute ago, I was just talking about the fact that Mo Brooks, I got a call from the Washington Post on Saturday, did a discussion with them. New York Times wrote an article about Mo Brooks. Says here that basically the loss of the Trump campaign, Trump endorsement has not been something that seems to have done anything to sway his ability to stay in the race. He's certainly considered one of the leading candidates. New York Times article says, scorned by Trump, Mo Brooks rises in the Alabama Senate race. Article dated yesterday. And it just basically says that under a rain of attack ads, polls showed him falling behind his two rivals. And then, of course, he had the issue with Trump. But Mr. Brooks has staged a compelling comeback, it says, with recent polling putting him in a statistical tie for the lead in a tight three-candidate race. So there's that. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there right now that says that we've got basically no way of knowing how this is going to turn out tomorrow. There's a lot of undecided still in that race. Last time I saw, I think we still had somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 14% undecided in that U.S. Senate race. It just depends on which poll you're looking at. I got a caller on line three. I'll be glad to take that real quick. Robbie from Rogersville on line three. This is Phil Williams. How you doing today, sir?
Good afternoon. I've been looking forward to talking to you. And I just want to remind everybody, and you can do also, that there is an amendment on the ballot for the state parks.
Yeah.
Alabama has some of the most beautiful state parks. The prettiest places in the state normally have a place for you to stay. And I hope that they'll vote for it.
Well, hey, Robbie, let me ask you about that, because I actually was going to bring that up here in a little while, because I'm not truly a fan of that. I mean, I love our state parks. I go to them whenever I can, but I'm not a fan of that bill. They've had so much money in Montgomery. They've had so many opportunities to do things with it. All they did was grew government. They could have used some of that money they had in hand to do this, but instead they decided to take out more debt and do a bond issue. That's my problem with that bill or that amendment.
Okay, well, you're educating me then.
Well,
I'm still going to vote for the bill, though. I promise you. If you go over to Joe Wheeler right now, the roads and everything are in poor shape, and they need improving. And I'm going to go ahead and vote for that amendment.
No worries, and I appreciate you calling in on that. That's a great segue for me to talk about it. And you're right; it does require a vote of the people. So, Robbie, thanks for calling in, man. Appreciate that very much. I'll talk about it for a minute longer. Folks, if you want to see something on this, the Alabama Policy Institute, one of their staff members is Justin Bogey, who's been on the show multiple times. Justin did a piece on this where he just the other day wrote, and I believe 1819 News published it. I'm going to try and go to their website while we're talking so I can find it. Let me search Bogey's name on the 1819news.com website. Bogey, B-O-G-I-E. He wrote a piece that basically laid it out. Yeah, here it is. He said the state park. Yeah, okay, it's up. You can go on the 1819news.com website. Just Google on the little search thing they have. Google Bogey's last name. I think the second one that comes up is State Parks Amendment, he says, is legislature's fiscal malfeasance. But he makes the point. He said that, you know, we love our parks. I do too. But it's an $85 million bond issue that's going to take 20 years to pay off. And that funding, while it's dedicated to the state parks, it says the remaining $5 million is going to fall under the jurisdiction of the Historical Commission. And he says, this is Justin's words, but I agree with it. He says, I'm not here to tell you our state parks do or do not need the funding for maintenance and renovations and upgrades. He said, what I can tell you, though, is our legislators have decided the only way to provide that funding is by taking on more debt, which is just the latest example of their fiscal malfeasance that we witnessed the last 4 years. He points out that just this year alone, Alabama began 2022 with more cash on hand than any point in our state history. So much so, they had a $1.25 billion surplus, and they had to do a secondary, contingently appropriated budget for the education fund. And by the way, some of that cash may not have been eligible to be used in state parks. I don't know, but I got news. Money's fungible. And if they'd wanted to, there was the ability because cash in hand was a surplus in both Alabama budgets this year. But he points out that rather than do that, though, they chose to go ahead and spend it on other things and then take out a bond issue to pay for the parks. And I just look at that and think, dang, fellas, really? You couldn't do better than taking on debt? So as much as I love our parks, I've hiked our parks, I've boated in our parks, you know, I've gone camping in our parks, and I do love them. One of my favorites is Guntersville State Park, Montesano State Park, Buck's Pocket. I've done a lot of time in the woods, in and around Cheeha, hiking on the lower portion of what some consider the lower portion of the Appalachian Trail, which is called the Penhody. Parts of that are covered by a state park. All that to say, folks, I love our state park system, but I have an issue with the fact that we chose a bond issue at a time when we had huge cash surpluses. I don't know why that was necessary. So there's that. And in deference to our caller, certainly vote your way, but this is a constitutional amendment, which means the polls, it goes to the people at the polls, and the people of the state will have to approve it before it can become the law. Something else that's happening in the most recent news coming out, Yellowhammer News, dated yesterday, says that actually one of my personal heroes, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. If you don't know General Boykin, man, you need to look this man up. You talk about someone who is a rock, who is a rock for faith as well as a rock for America. I've had a chance to be with him personally several times, and his book is called Never Surrender. Anyway, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, a retired three-star general, he was one of the founding members of Delta Force. I mean, he was on almost every major mission for the longest period of time. The invasion of Panama, the Black Hawk Down situation in the Battle of Mogadishu, the hunt for Pablo Escobar in South America, the invasion of Grenada, where he also earned a Purple Heart. And he was also involved in the attempt to rescue the Iran hostages. So Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin just came out and endorsed Mike Durant for U.S. Senate. And he says, this is his quote, he says, "Mike Durant is an American hero who is signing up for one more tour of duty," said Boykin. "Mike's a conservative patriot who knows that we need to stop Joe Biden's liberal agenda and take our country back from the radical left," and goes on to talk about his endorsement. I will tell you this, too. Boykin is not only an amazing man in terms of his military resume, he's also an amazing man of faith. His ability to stand up for his faith in difficult times has been amazing to watch over the years. He's now the vice president of the Family Research Council, which is one of the most solid Christian conservative Washington, D.C. Advocacy organizations in the nation. So that's Jerry Boykin endorsing Mike Durant. Talk about endorsements. Sometimes it's amazing to watch who endorses with money. So one of the things we've got going on right now is in our state Supreme Court race, we have an empty seat. Seat being vacated by a retiring justice. Is the race is on in the Republican primary right now between Deborah Jones, who is a circuit court judge who's been on the show a couple of times. She's over in Calhoun County, and Greg Cook, who is a longtime practicing attorney and has been the attorney for the Alabama State Republican Party for a number of years. Deborah Jones and Greg Cook are the two Republican candidates. There's been sort of a trend throughout time on this, up until recently, that Greg Cook is seen as the guy sort of leading the pack in fundraising, leading the pack in terms of endorsements and the Montgomery Association's supporting his race. Deborah Jones is someone who has been working on the bench for a number of years, knows what it means to be a judge. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Deborah Jones, who'd been, I don't want to say struggling with fundraising, but certainly not matching Greg Cook's, all of a sudden, trial lawyers. These are the plaintiff's lawyers. There's a defense bar, which I've been in kind of both. I've been a defense bar guy for many years. I also do some plaintiff's work, but not a lot. My practice is geared differently. But there are those, you know, like the Alexander Shannara types that and I say that types, like, it sounds derogatory. I didn't mean it that way. But they're the known for being the plaintiff's lawyers. Well, the plaintiff's lawyers have suddenly dropped $1.2 million on top of Deborah Jones's campaign. I mean, like, wham. Like, where'd that come from? And you can tell It was some type of an all call. And so it's gotten everybody's attention. Suddenly, Deborah Jones and Greg Cook, the two Republican candidates, the financial support just went through the roof for Deborah Jones all at one time. And that's interesting because the trial lawyers, the personal injury lawyers, $1.2 million all at one time, that is a huge hit. And it's interesting to watch. Greg Cook, his response to that is that according to Jones' opponent, Greg Cook, trial lawyers in the past have traditionally supported Democrat candidates. And they have in the past. They don't always, especially in today's environment. But it's still interesting to watch this happen in a state where we are what I would consider to be a conservative jurisprudence state. The trial lawyers, they've learned how to work that. They've learned how to negotiate, how to mediate, and how to cut their losses when they have to. Whereas back in the day, they ruled the roost. But now dropping $1.2 million at the last minute on top of a U.S. Senate, I'm sorry, a Supreme Court justice race, that's pretty epic. All right, listen, I got a couple of more pieces about this pole position section of the Triple Dipper that we're in. We'll go ahead and take a break right now. We'll come back from that, wrap that section up, and then head into an interview at 4 o'clock with Tim James, one of the top contenders trying to unseat incumbent Kay Ivey for governor. Y'all stay tuned. You're going to want to hear that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, just plain right. So, hey, got a story that just broke here in the last few hours. I'm looking at it online, not one I had a chance to print out and do my highlights on, so I'm just going to kind of go with it for a minute, but it fits the theme of what we're doing. I'm still in number one of the Triple Dipper, y'all. I mean, almost 2 hours here talking about the pole position. Poll, P-O-L-L, poll. The poll position. Tomorrow, we go to the polls. The polls are saying certain things about the races. You know what else is interesting, too, is to watch and see what's happening in other states. And I read you that earlier, that story off of 1819, talking about the interesting dynamics about not only Alabama's primary being tomorrow, but also Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, I think Minnesota. So, yeah, we got some high-profile races in other places. I didn't even mention the fact, by the way, in that article, Texas... Ken Paxton is the attorney general in Texas who's running for the U.S. Senate race, and he's got some challengers. Right now, I do believe he's out front, but that's an interesting one, too. He has truthfully been, like, in the fray as much, if not more, than our own attorney general, Steve Marshall, has been in terms of fighting back on some of the awful policies from the Biden administration. But he's also had to deal firsthand with what's going on at his Texas border with Mexico. So that's happening, and tomorrow we'll know more about Ken Paxton's political future. But here's a story that just broke, the one I was referencing a moment ago. Fox News has got a story up right now. The Washington Post admits that voting is surging in Georgia despite previous reports and claims about voter suppression. Do you remember all this? Remember when Coca-Cola and who was it? The Delta Airlines were all out there talking about, oh, this, and then Joe Biden called it Jim Crow 2.0. You know, oh, this Georgia voting law, it's going to be awful and people aren't going to know what to do. Well, guess what? They're having record turnouts. Oh, and the Washington Post had to admit it. The Washington Post, it says, admitted over the weekend that the number of Georgians turning out to vote in this year's midterm election primaries was surging despite its previous reporting and claims that the state's new law aimed at election integrity would lead to voter suppression. Funny how that works out. Funny how they ran the piece on Saturday, which is not the usual big news day. It says in a Saturday piece headlined, "Voting is surging in Georgia despite controversial new election law." It was only controversial if you were a liberal, by the way. Conservatives were like, what's the big deal? Alabama's right next door going, we've been doing this for years. I mean, what the heck? But it says the Post reported that early voting in Georgia was seeing its largest turnout ever, laying waste to its own claims as well as those of Democrats and other left-wing figures that the law, signed by Governor Brian Kemp in March of 21, amounted to Republican attempts to make it harder for people to vote. And I love that. You know what's also interesting is Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is running unopposed on the Democrat ticket for governor. It's going to be interesting to see how she handles this. Because if you remember, it's all about voter suppression. It's all about keeping people down. It's all about, okay, well, anyway, the bottom line is Stacey Abrams, I still can't believe she's a viable candidate after watching her speak sometimes. She does not strike me as being somebody that I would just love to have as my governor. Of course, I'm a conservative. She's not. But she just doesn't come across well. It's just amazing to me. Anyway, she says, is this her quote? I think it's her quote. Let's see here. It's a Post editorial board. Republicans in many states, including Georgia, have adopted a different strategy. Make it harder to vote. No, that's not the full return to Jim Crow, but it shows a toxic hostility to democracy that no Republican can take pride in, said the April 2021 Washington Post editorial board, who is now having to go, it appears that more people are turning out for the polls than we expected. There you go. All right, hey, listen, a couple other things, and I'm going to wrap this sucker up. All right, you've seen, by the way, story on AL Daily News, which is really an AP story by Kim Chandler, just picked up by Alabama Daily News, talked about the fact that and it's dated yesterday, the Alabama's Republican primary for the U.S. Senate race has become a bitter, it says, bitter high-dollar contest, and there have been amazing amounts of negative campaign ads. One political analyst, a guy named David Mowry, I know him, he's down in Montgomery. Mowry says the gloves have come off. And well, that's true. You can see it. That's part of the reason why the flip-flopping. I talked about that with that Washington Post reporter on Saturday. They said, to what do you attribute some of this? And I said, well, there's been a massive amount of negative campaigning. And despite the fact that it's unpopular to view it, to some it has an impact. For those who don't already know who they're voting for, those who are undecided or on the fence, negative campaigning has an impact. But in a positive campaign mode, here's the last thing I have on the Triple Dipper for the day. Ted Cruz campaigning for Mo Brooks in Alabama today. TheHill.com, another national periodical, reporting that Senator Ted Cruz was heading into Alabama today in the Huntsville area to campaign for Representative Mo Brooks in his bid for the U.S. Senate seat. Coming up at 4:30, I've got somebody calling in. That somebody happens to be my brother, who went there, and he's going to give me the man on the street review of how it went with Ted Cruz speaking today on behalf of Mo Brooks, and that's interesting. So far, my brother's comment to me on text was, Ted Cruz is a really effective speaker, and he certainly is. Martha McCallum talking about the Alabama race on Fox News says, I don't think we're going to have a final say in this Alabama race. I don't think any of the three candidates getting over 50. Well, she is right there. But the question is, which two will carry on? Who's in the pole position for the polls? All right, folks, that's it. Coming up in a few minutes, right after the news break, we got Tim James, candidate for governor, in the final push. Y'all stay tuned. You're going to want to hear it.